Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Good News Update with Living Compassion. This is Ashwini. And as you have no doubt heard, I'm joined by Jen. And today we are looking at our Bridge Walk campaign and continuing to look at the High Five Challenge theme. And Jen is joining us to tell us about how this High Five Challenge is being done by our friends in Cantaloupe. Welcome, Jen. Well, officially,
thank
that
you.
Is.
Thank you. Officially, thank you very much. So, you know, I know I've probably said this any number of times on the Good News Update and in other forums, but one of my very favorite things is that each week I get to have a phone call with Teresa where we go over the business of the cooperative. And I just love it when there's something that she's really excited about, and I get to hear that special Teresa, well, I guess people have heard it in person themselves on the Good News Update, you know, when we've done it live from Cantaloupe. But so I was talking to her this last week, and she said, Jen, everyone is very excited about the Bridge Walk.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, just that trill in her voice that has that beautiful, uh-huh. It's almost like she's singing a song. That's how I experience uh-huh. it when she's saying it. And it uh-huh. imparts that excitement that I project she's talking about amongst the team. And it's fun because for a number of years now, the team has done something in parallel for what we're doing with the Bridge Walk, but it feels somehow like each year it's kind of building and they're getting more and more into the rhythm of it. And uh-huh. it seems, at least from what Teresa says, that this year they're really getting a sense of that parallel celebration, that they really are mm-hmm. feeling they're celebrating there, and we're celebrating here. And, in fact, they're also, they haven't told me the details yet, but they're planning something for October 3rd also, where they're uh-huh, all going to come together. Uh-huh. So it's really fun.
Uh-huh. So what I'm hearing you say is there's a lot of the thrill of participation, and I think that that's what that list is. And we can hear yeah. it in our own voices when we throw ourselves wholeheartedly into something and yeah. know that there's that resonance of support, and yeah. it's exciting yeah. and it's delightful, and we're doing something together. And that joy of, I suppose, what we're talking about, right, Jen, which is living in Gassho. There's the sense yeah. of participation, of doing it together, of bringing the hands together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And the Gassho is such a perfect image for it, isn't it? That, I mean, yeah. there are so many levels on which that metaphor is playing itself out. And one, as you just said, that is that I saw is that Cantaloupe is putting up their hand and we're putting up our hand. And
yeah.
just that
in
deep
it.
Gassho together, you know?
Yeah, in the spirit of a high five, right? That's what
in
makes it such
a high five.
Wahoo kind
exactly.
of experience.
Yes.
Yes.
And can I tell you one of my favorite things, and sort of one of the things of where this idea of the theme came from, is that I look at the folks in Cantaloupe, and I'll just use as an example the young girls who are around 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, somewhere in that range. And I look at the ones who are staying with it and who are coming to the property every day and who are getting themselves to school every day, along with ungodly things that are going on in their lives that many of us mm-hmm. can't even imagine. Lots of them, you know, if they don't have their own children, then they're playing that role for many young, young children in their lives. And I just look at that level of commitment, perseverance, and dedication, and it moves me so much. And I just thought, gosh, wouldn't it be fun to have a celebration of that? And where, so here we are, you know, on this side, and we're going up against whatever we're going up against, right? You know, it could seem mm-hmm. on the outside like circumstances are much easier, which in many ways they are, but that we're in the middle of it, there's nothing wrong with your retreat right now. And so present to that torture that happens internally for each of us. And so mm-hmm. how heroic it is to keep any of those commitments that we keep to practice, to ourselves, to life, to authenticity, to show up. And it's just mm-hmm. so fun and moving to me that, you know, they're heroes. You know, we're heroes, that we're together, we're supporting each other. And there's sort of this sense for me that if those girls can get up every day and still come and, you know, be committed to their future when they don't have very many models for what that's, you know, what promise there is in that for them, then I can go up against the voices of self-hate. I can keep my commitments to being here, to being here for this person. And that's kind of the process that for me is so moving in the parallel celebration of this theme for us.
Mm-hmm. And so it is a true celebration of heroism in that whatever our circumstances, whatever the voices are saying to us, we are willing to go up. We're willing to choose life. We're willing to choose compassion. Mm-hmm. We're willing to choose the authenticity that wants to show up. And it's truly celebrating the practice heroes as well as those girls who wake up every morning and go up against challenging circumstances. And it's just such a source of inspiration, which is probably why the voices don't want us to acknowledge it. And therefore, the celebration that we do every year is to acknowledge all of this work that we do, this project that we've done, that all of our participation makes a difference and counts. And it is a celebration. Yeah. It is celebrate living in Gassho because of exactly that. Because if we don't celebrate it, if we don't plant that flag against karmic conditioning, it wins in a way because it doesn't acknowledge what we do to go up against it. That doesn't become the story of record.
That's such a good point, Ashwini. That really, really is. That the bridge walk is it's the celebration phase. It's the acknowledgement phase of our, you know, Africa Vulnerable Children Project year. And it really is what feels like it launches and fuels us into the next year of the project.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not just the project, because every year, I mean, the project is our practice. It's our practice of delving into the deepest and most generous parts of ourselves, doing for the love of others in participation, and that's what we celebrate.
Exactly. And what a brilliant coup it is to, I don't know if I can quite say it, but to take the concrete work that we do in with our colleagues in Cantawamba, and to use that for the benefit of fueling practice, of fueling each of our practice individually. You know, that's such a brilliant thing to do.
Mm. Yeah. And I project that that's what produces the lilt in Teresa's voice, right? Because she has that acknowledgement in the reverse there, that our practice and our commitment and our showing up and our doing this extra bit within quotes at this particular time and in a concerted way is inspiring for them to show up as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I always hear them say every time we're there how much it moves them that, you know, so they see me and they see, you know, a handful of other folks and they know Mama Sherry and, you know, there have been a handful of people in the Sangha who have gone, but the vast majority of people who are supporting this project in such a committed, heartfelt way have never met them. And they've never met those folks. And I think that's very, very moving to them that, wow, you know, there are people halfway across the world who live in this country where they have plenty and they're thinking about us. You know, I think that's very, very moving. Yeah.
And in some way that we know and acknowledge, it is the intimacy that we develop as a Sangha, right? It's not personal, and yet it holds that love in a way that just is breathtaking when we stop to think about it.
Yeah, truly. That's such, and the fact that we've never met face-to-face and yet can have such an intimate connection really illustrates that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is that is sort of the participation that happens from the Sangha here, right? We put such a lot of effort in bringing the stories of the folks like Ruth and Teresa and Veronica. I mean, those names, when we say them on the air, everybody knows who they are. They've seen pictures, they've seen faces, they've seen videos. And so it really is just a lovely demonstration of a way to be and to interact and to relate and to connect. That conditioned mind just does not grasp and cannot articulate, and it isn't an experience of conditioning, but it's an experience we can all have.
Yeah.
And we do. Oh, you know, that's the celebration. We do.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before I hand over the show to Michael, perhaps we could just look at the five commitments that they've that the Sangha there has made, because I find them so beautiful. I mean, they're just so incredible. It's so incredible that they chose those five things. And maybe for those people who haven't been part of the campaign or haven't yet had a chance to keep up with the blog, you might articulate for us what it is that their five commitments are for the High Five Challenge.
Right. So our challenge right now is to get those in the few minutes that we have, huh? So I'll just say a couple words. So, you know, attendance is one of the big ones, and I think we've articulated a number of reasons why that's so big. It's a huge challenge. I mean, they're up against so many things that, you know, we don't, I mean, it's plenty of a challenge for all of us to be in attendance, but, you know, they're really malaria and TB and poverty and not having enough to eat and needing to help at home and little ones to take care of. And, I mean, the list goes on. So so that's huge, just that commitment to attend every day. English, I think we've talked about that any number of times on the Good News Update in terms of just what an important, concrete possibility that is for them. If they can learn English, then they've really got a door into opportunity that they wouldn't otherwise have. And, again, we could say lots more about that. But and then the caring kindness. And those came particularly from, there was a very sad situation that happened with a young boy recently who took his own life in the community. And I think it was, you know, certainly that happens here as well. But it was a wake-up call, as it always is, of, wow, what's going on inside of people that we don't know? And I think it's really reminded them of how much they want to be in communication and how much they want to demonstrate care and demonstrate kindness to one another in order to, you know, they're living a hard life. But they're also part of an amazing sangha. I mean, literally, you know, they're being supported by a group of people halfway across the world, and they live in an amazing community within Cantalumba. I mean, just a super quick story about that, which is that I remember when we lost our first cooperative member, Christopher, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, and Teresa telling me that the rest of Cantalumba was just blown away by what was demonstrated amongst the Living Compassion family in terms of gathering together around that family when that death happened. So I think just a real recommitment to that process of exquisite care and kindness. You know, we can't we can't solve the malaria. I mean, speaking for them, you know, we can't make, you know, wave our magic wand and make all the poverty go away, but we sure can hold hands and, you know, love each other unconditionally and be with each other as we go through that. So.
Well, and I think it just mirrors our attitude of mind, right, when we keep our commitments, because it's the same thing. It's we're committing to showing up. We're committing to going up, to doing the things that we know, like English is a possibility for them. All the things we know in practice that will cause us to wake up and end suffering. And we're doing it with an attitude of mind and care and attention. I mean, it's just exactly the same process of the High Five.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jen.
Oh, thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael. Turning it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Should we turn it back over to them? Couldn't you just listen to them talk about that place and those people and that project and for at least another 10, 15, half hour?
Yeah.
So thrilling. Yeah, the whole show, what the heck. It's just so thrilling.
It is. It's great. It's beautiful. And I remember saying before that project is just goodness. There's just no downside to it. It's all so wonderful and inspiring, and it's like pure goodness.
Yeah. It's just goodness. And to hear the stories. And, I mean, we just hear nonstop stories about those people and the extraordinary way they approach life and take care of one another and are committed to their community. And it's nonstop. and they're just so inspiring. And the point that Ashwini and Jen were making, that of the parallels, you know, that it is exactly the same. I mean, when you say that project is just goodness, it is in every direction, right? It's just the goodness of people around the world who are supporting those people and the goodness of the work that those people are doing, and it's just goodness.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. And not that far away when we get to have our big celebration. I went to the website for the first time and put my numbers in there, and I was so excited to do it, I got to tell you. So I hope, that anybody who hasn't logged their high five numbers yet, please go to the website and do it. It's very fun. It's fun to read what people are writing, and it's fun to see the numbers grow. And yeah, we got a long ways to go, though. I got to tell you, to hit our goal, at least
hit
the numbers that I saw when I was there. So I do hope that people will get on there and add their numbers to it, because it's important.
Yes,
that's us doing our part.
Yes, so it's keeping in the commitments and then reporting on, putting them in the website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing my five a day, and after so many days, I just add those up and add that number to the number that's already there. And heck, if I didn't do five a day, you know, I still add up whatever I did and add it to the number. Every bit counts. Every bit helps. And what we don't want to do is let the voices say, well, you've only done three this week, so, you know, there's no sense in it. No. Add them in and recommit. We can do that in any moment.
Yes, yes. And that does seem to be the secret, that recommitting in every moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to share before I jump into the announcements?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Sure. Two new group coaching offerings are coming up in September. Meals with the Mentor will provide support in bringing awareness to all areas of food. And in Transitions with the Mentor, participants will explore changes in their lives and the impact of practice on their experience.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, those are exciting topics, aren't they?
That's
great. Meals and Transitions.
Yes.
That is good.
Yes. And for more information on those, visit sanghamarket.com.
So, Michael, you know we're in an email class. I know you know that because I know you're in the class.
Yes.
I mean, I know that because you told me.
Yes.
And so, you know, I am, thank God, I am, although I confessed to somebody today that I am a world-class nag. And that I'm happy. I'm proud of that because, as you know, nagging is the highest form of love.
Warm up.
And because if you love, I mean, you have kids, right? You nag them all the time.
Yes.
Why do you nag them? Because you love them, not because you like to nag. You know, that's a different thing. If somebody just likes to nag because they like to nag, they're not going for world class nag. World class nagging comes from you love. And so you'll just never stop attempting to get the person to do the thing that's going to take care of them. That's the whole point of it. And so I'm just on people, you know, like crazy about get a recording and listening practice. It's the thing that's going to make a difference. The people, you know, that we read in the class that say, and recording and listening practice has made all the difference. Or since I started doing recording and listening, I could see that, you know, it's huge. It will make the difference, and I just keep hitting people over the head with it. So these group coaching sessions are beautiful support for that practice. right? So you're gonna do a lot of recording and listening as you do your meals with the mentor and working with the mentor and the coach, of course, and transitions. And so for people who really want to turn their life around, that's what's required of us. We actually have to want to end suffering more than we want to suffer. Now, it can sound, almost everybody, especially every conditioned mind, will say, well, of course I want to end suffering more than I don't want to end suffering, but I can't because blah, 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 blah. And that's actually, I actually want to continue suffering, but I don't want to admit it because people won't like me and I'll sound like a bad person. So when we really do want to stop suffering, to turn our lives around, quit being victims and quit whining and feeling sorry for ourselves and hoping everybody else will feel sorry for us, then we hop on an opportunity like that because that's the thing that's going to give us the support that we need to get past the resistance. And those are fabulous programs. I mean, we have a lot of fabulous programs, but that group mentoring is, group coaching in mentoring is a really powerful one. Okay,
yes,
that's my commercial on that.
Great. And mm-hmm. everyone is invited to Sebastopol, California, this Thursday, August 20th, for an engaging conversation with you, Sherry, on the power of practice.
That's right, where I can nag people in person. Not on this, not on open air and not in an email class, but I can be right there looking you in the eye and nagging you. And you will feel the love of that nag.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's about an hour north of San Francisco if you don't know where Sebastopol is.
I just learned something new, Michael. I was born in this state, and I've lived here all my life, and mostly in Northern California. And I actually thought Sebastopol was east of Santa Rosa until I looked at a map today and went, oh, son of a gun.
So, west.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
that's going to be mm-hmm. fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited.
Me too. And then on Sunday, August 30th, you'll be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania with Ashwini to lead a workshop on the power of practice.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Yes. And so for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. If you'd like to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And if you can focus on one topic in 5 minutes, that would help everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Danny from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Danny. How are you doing?
I think I'm doing good. I'm nervous as all get out. I'm surprised I'm the first one on the show. So
your heart is definitely beating.
Yes, you're familiar with this biological process.
Well, it's one of those. Yeah, I'm doing well. I've got a lot of excitement going here. Yeah, I'm really alive. Yep, doing good.
Good. Well, first of all, I really I appreciate that you're a nag. You just had me laughing. I also want to put a plug in for the Zen coaching. I just finished for this session with my Zen coach, and I think they're a little bit of a nag as well, and that's probably why I'm on this show today. So,
oh, very good.
So they're keeping up their end of the bargain and ending suffering. And I really do appreciate what I've received from that. And I'm glad that I was able to do that as a gift to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I'm not really, you know, I was kind of, coerced or bullied or nagged into calling. And I thought, well, I am not sure what I want to talk about. And so I'll start with right now with, I think, one of the topics that I heard you guys talking about, which is recording and listening. And One of the reasons I was doing the Zen coaching was again, to kind of establish in a relationship with my recording and listening practice, which was hit and miss. And for me, I was feeling, I think one of the things that comes up for me on it is I don't trust myself. I don't trust that voice on the other side that's talking to me. And I'm not trusting the wisdom that that person, this being, is offering. And so that was
well,
one...
Well, Danny, may
one,
I? May I?
Yes,
may I interrupt
may.
You
yes,
for
you
just
may.
A second? Okay. Can you Absolutely. Give me one or two things that voice has said to you?
Well, for instance, one of the things would be, for instance, if I'd be listening to some of the something that I'd be saying, it would be the voice would say, "Well, that's nothing. That doesn't really say anything. That's not really significant." Or you need to say more, or it needs to be, you know, it's not enough. There's a certain kind of, there's not enough quality to it. And there's...
To what the voice, what the voice on the recorder is saying back to you.
Well, the voice on the recorder, for instance, it, depending on what I'm recording, Sherry, you know, I have the recording thing on the app on my phone. You know, it's anything from reassurances to gratitudes or whatever, and I will record, for instance, gratitudes, what I'm grateful for in the day. And actually, that right now, that's been an ongoing practice for myself, which is what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that this is a beautiful day, and this is a, you know, I'm grateful for the friends that I have. I'm grateful that I was able to complete this particular task. And when I was doing this recording and listening, one of the things that I'd found, and I'm not sure if I'm really answering your question when I move further in saying this, I just started gratitudes for myself because I've been feeling depressed and down and disconnected. And through the coaching, what I came to was doing gratitudes because I felt overwhelmed. There was an overwhelm. Mm-hmm. There's too much. Mm-hmm. There's too many things on this recorder. Where do I start? What do I say? And I thought, why don't you simplify this and just start with one thing, and what about gratitude? Even if you don't feel gratitude, let's just do gratitude.
You will by the time you get finished with it.
What I'm aware of is even when I'm feeling like crap, there's something to be grateful for. Even if it's me sitting there, breathing. And and it's also one of the things that I'm grateful for because I have an alarm that goes off, and I've been bullied by this alarm for probably a few years now, and that's one of the reasons I, for the Zen coach, which was it would go off, and it was the transform your life and record and listen, and the alarm would go off, and I wouldn't record and listen. I've never responded to it, but I'd always get that little nagging thing that's like, you need to record and listen, you need to record and listen, and I wouldn't do it. And there would be this resistance. And I thought, what is this about? I feel like there's a bully here, and I'm afraid to deal with it. And it seems
well, no,
so
wait,
simple
wait,
that
wait,
I just...
I got to ask you, what's the bully? The alarm?
The bully is kind of, well, it's not the alarm. At first I thought it was the alarm, but it's the voice after the alarm.
It says
you don't have anything. You don't have anything good enough to say or significant to say into this recording device, and I think other things. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but that's one of them. Which is, you know, what do you have to say? What significance do you have to say? I'm thinking, hey, I'm just talking to myself here, and before I know it, I'm having conditioning. Dialoguing with conditioning, there's an argument here. So what's happened, what I got out of, which is the bully is now gone because I just record and listen gratitude. in that time. And it's almost like I pushed through a little wall that was mm-hmm. like, what is that, you know? Mm-hmm. And that voice is now in the background, probably not forever gone, but for now, gone.
Yeah.
And right now it's replaced with...
The one I want to get back to, though, before I let you go, is is the statement that you don't trust yourself. You don't trust the voice. And I want to hear about that, because that's significant. Tell me about that.
I think, God, actually, it's like I'm going to cry when you say that. And I think that's probably why I wanted to evade it. But I think I've let myself down for a long time. And by not following through with commitments and things that I feel like I should have been committed to, whether they're practice commitments or educational commitments or, you know, things that I feel that I could have been better at, and I feel like I've let myself down many times. And and I think there's that person inside, there's somebody inside of me that has been disappointed by my not following through.
Now what does the voice on the recorder say to you about that?
The voice,
what would the voice
on the recorder
say that you wouldn't trust?
I haven't recorded that, but it's a voice in my head. But when I,
right.
The voice, I guess, would say, you have, there's so many times you did not follow through, I'm having a hard time trusting you, that you're going to follow through this time.
Okay,
if
a mentoring voice responded to that, what would that voice say?
The voice would say,
you wouldn't trust. So throughout your life, you haven't followed through on commitments. You haven't done as well as you could have. You feel disappointed with your performance. Okay, and so you say that into the recorder. What information would you get back that would cause you not to trust who would be talking to you?
What information when I get back?
So here's
state
the thing.
It one more.
This is my concern, Danny. This is my concern, and then you can tell me if I'm completely off base. Okay. My concern is that one of the ways that egocentric karmic conditioning, self hate, the voice in the head, controls people, especially mm-hmm. about the things that would take care of them, is mm-hmm. to say things like, "I hate the sound of my voice. I don't trust that person who's talking to me. I don't think that that's a mentor. I don't know who that is, but I don't think it's a mentor." And very often, what's happening is the person is being encouraged to distrust and therefore dismiss the very information that could help them.
Got it. Absolutely. And I guess, and I don't know if this kind of speaks to something that speaks to what you're saying, which is, you know, when I, for instance, when that voice comes in, what I say to myself is, I am here now. This is what's important, is that I am here now. And, everything else really just doesn't freaking matter. because I
That's exactly right, and
not in the way that I can't use it, unless I can use it as information to help push me forward. But otherwise, it means
which
it's
is doubtful,
irrelevant.
It's doubtful, and so that is exactly the kind of message that the mentor would give. Because it's
and that is actually, and that is a message I've, in the mentor area, that is a message I tell myself is, I am here now, and I don't know where we're going with this, buddy, but we are both here now, and we're working on this together. And and it is, I definitely feel the pull of that regret and that mistrust pulling at me, and it's been
we must cut that off.
Keep nagging, Sherry. Keep nagging.
Yeah, because see, that's exactly, I mean, it's so perfect, Danny, because that's exactly the way it works. So you get to that place of, it doesn't matter what happened. We're here now, and we're working on it now. Now is all we've got. If everything that happened before got us here, yay, good, let's have a party. Time to celebrate. We're here. And then the voices want to say, well, but, you know, it is too bad that, I mean, there, you know, I do regret that I did, and you just sink, slide right back into that same place. So, no, we just don't give any attention to that. Exactly. And there is nothing real in life that regrets. Nothing authentic that is disappointed. Now, that's the kind of thing, you know, people just want to scream and throw things at me, but it's a true story, right? There is no, once we get to the present and we realize how grateful we are to be here, how much we appreciate everything that has gotten us here, then we know that there's nothing to regret, there's nothing to feel guilty about, there's nothing to be ashamed of, there's nothing to anything. It was all what it took to get here, and here we are. Now, where are we, and how do we want to move forward?
Thank you.
And that's the kind of thing that mentoring voice will say to you, okay, because it's true. And the thing about it is, the more you do recording and listening, the clearer you get about when there's a voice that slides in there that's going to try to con you. You know, pretty soon you'll just be able to hear it. It just sounds fake and phony and false. But the mentor never does. And you can feel that you can feel the sincerity, the truthfulness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel it in your heart. And if there's any resistance, it'll be a voice coming in that says, oh, well, yeah, you know, sure, just everything about you is fine and just do whatever you want to do. That's not what we're saying. That's not it at all. And you'll just get a sense of, is it kind? Is it compassionate? Is it wise? Is it understanding? Mentor. Is it trying to pull you out of the present? Is it talking to you about something else, somewhere else, another time, another, then conditioning?
Thank you.
You are welcome.
You.
Let's talk often, shall we?
Well, it's a pleasure to be first on this list, and I'm grateful. Well, I'm grateful to myself, and I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful to Michael for all that you do. So thank you so much.
Let's just include the whole darn world, shall we?
Let's include the whole darn world.
let's just be grateful for everything. What the heck? No boundaries. We have no boundaries. Thank you, Danny. Take good care of yourself, okay?
Yeah, deep gosh out to both of you. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Gosh out to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Danny. That was a fabulous conversation, Sharon.
That's good, huh?
That was great. Great.
We've talked to Danny before, have we?
No, I think that's the first, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And we're going to hear from our coaches program now, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Okay.
This year's theme is training to live in this here now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services, under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Rico.
Well, hello, Rico.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
What's going on?
Well, the most wonderful thing just happened to me where I've been volunteering every week at a nursing home to visit an old man that doesn't have any family. And he just turned 100 a couple days ago.
Goodness.
And
wow.
he died today.
Hmm.
And I've been with him every day for the last 8 or 9 days. And it just, it was just such a sweet, sweet moment for both of us that as he approached his end, he became more and more like an infant.
Hmm.
And it was just a wonderful thing to hold his hand and to sing to him and to pray with him. And it didn't matter whether he responded or not, but it really, I think I've been with about a dozen people now as they passed. And it's as joyous as being present at a birth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of wonderful. And I've been working and pulling my hair out on my project to raise money for the Vulnerable African Children Program. And
mm-hmm.
I bet 3 dozen times I would have set a match to the whole project because it has taken me beyond any of my experience or capabilities, or so I believed.
Uh-huh.
And I would just, I have a young person who I sponsor, and I would look at her photo on my refrigerator, and I kept hearing the words, well, how did it go, what you do for others?
Mm-hmm.
So
you do for the love of others?
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole new adventure, and I think I could have finished 3 of these projects by the time it takes me to come this far with this one, because I'm using a whole different building medium. But we're persevering, and it's really difficult and at the same time really rewarding to not get talked out of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So it's you're finding new levels of willingness.
That's the word, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's not willingness every second of the day. Sometimes I get to a certain level and I just put the tools down and I walk away and make a cup of tea or go for a walk or do something else until I'm ready to allow the willingness to return.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to keep reminding myself, this is not a job. This is not a requirement. This is joy. This is fun because it's called a fundraiser.
Yes, that's hard to remember sometimes when we're doing something that is
really
taxing us beyond what we thought we could be taxed.
But I can't tell you, it's the most perfect project. And we spoke about this when I saw you a month ago, that when particularly men get to a certain age, if they don't do stuff, they just stop living.
Mm-hmm.
And this mm-hmm. just, I mean, it takes me to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it's all done, it's going to make an old yachtsman very, very happy. And I think we're going to generate a substantial amount to send to Africa. And it's a win for everybody.
Yes.
It's for the person who gets the craft, and it's for the guy who built the craft, and it's for the kids who benefit from the funds.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. And, Rico, it's such a parallel, again, isn't it, to awareness practice? Because in our lives, we get to that place where the voices kick in, right? This is too hard. This is stupid. I don't want to do this. What is the point of this? Now, you have that picture of that little girl on your refrigerator, so you have a very clear visual of why you're going beyond what you would have ever believed you could do. In practice, in awareness practice, in which this certainly is, obviously, but it's harder sometimes when a person doesn't have that kind of visual, because it's me, right? I mean, it's my life. I'm doing this for me, and I hate what I'm doing, and I want to quit.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I hate it. But then, besides having the willingness return, people are coming up and donating really expensive materials. Like, in the last 7 days, I probably had $250 of materials donated.
Wow.
Like, and that just, I could almost cry, because it's like existence is saying, hey, man, you know, like, you're in the right place doing the right thing, so just enough of this guff, get to work.
And sometimes that's what we have to do, huh? We just kind of shake ourselves and remember who we are and what we want our lives to stand for and why we're doing what we're doing, and then we take that energy that was imploding into misery and suffering, and we use it to get going in the direction we want to go in, and boom, there we are.
Praise
Buddha. Whistling along.
Just praise Buddha and praise his holy name. The main purpose of this call was for some guidance, and I had the wonderful good fortune to spend 4 days in the privileged environment a month ago, and boy, it's like, talk about being in the light room. And it wasn't like flashing lights, but it was just being very much in the body, and the mind was very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet. And then I had all sorts of extremely urgent business headaches to deal with when I got back, and it seemed like every day it took a little bit more breathing to remember the light room, to be the light room.
Mm-hmm.
And then every day it would take like a few more breaths in sitting to get there. Well, that was fine, but it was still available. The light room was, okay, here's the light room. Wow, I understand. I really get it. I get the light room. It's not a fancy, flashy, Satori kind of thing. It's simply big, quiet space.
Mm-hmm.
So 8 or 10 days later, I had a medical consultation, and I have an upcoming surgery, very, very gruesome surgery, And the doctor said, okay, before we, it's like I'm a 1947 Dodge farm truck in Mexico, and they're scavenging for parts. They're trying to, you know, they have to order the parts for this surgery. And the doctor says, well, you know, we need to put you in the MRI to get a measurement and to figure out what we're going to do. And I said to the doctor, you know, I'd rather sail across the Atlantic Ocean like second time in a hurricane than go in that tunnel, the MRI tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I'd like you to do it. Well, I really got in touch with claustrophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was on July 21st, and for 3 weeks, every time I would be sitting, breathing, counting breaths, and then from nowhere would be this, because I've been through the tunnel experience 4 or 5 times, and it never got easier. And I would just, like, go into a panic on the meditation cushion.
Mm-hmm.
And wait a second, Rico. Wait. We're here to end suffering. This is exactly how you're causing yourself to suffer. It's no mystery. You're causing yourself to suffer. Yeah. But okay, just breathe. Go back to the breath, and it would pass, and I'd be centered in the light room again. But the surprising thing is how the mere thought, and I have this little 3x5 file card about how a thought is followed by a sensation, is followed by an automatic behavior. And it was like a millisecond, and I'd be in a panic about something that wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just like some guidance on what your view
well,
is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you probably know what I'm going to say. It's the reason that we practice directing the attention, right? Because that's what you were doing. You would watch how there would just be a flicker of an image or a thought or whatever, and there would be that reaction would kick up, right? So you're already primed. You know that there's tremendous dread of this machine. You know you're going to go in it again, and so you're primed. It's just going to be able to, that system is going to be able to take that and take you with the slightest provocation. Right, the slightest, that's not the word that I want, but you know what I mean. Any little
suggestion.
Yeah, any little thing would toss you into that experience. So one of the things that could be interesting, helpful, potentially, and especially since you are where you are with it, is that instead of trying to get away from it, you go into it. And you take yourself through the experience the way you would go through a guided imagery, say, where you just go through each step of it. You picture yourself going into it, and you're focused on your breath, and your body is calm, and you're inside there, and you're relaxed, and you can feel the come up, and you're relaxed, and you're breathing, and you're fine, and you're comfortable, and you're inside this tube, and there's plenty of room for you, plenty of space. You can have your eyes closed. There's plenty of air. You can keep breathing. And in that way, you take the power away from that that image or that story that's designed to toss you into the panic.
So if I understand, I'm going to go through this guided imagery on my own on yes. a regular basis.
Yes, yes. So that you don't. Now, this is an experiment, Rico, obviously, because we've never done this before. But my encouragement would be for you to do it when there's no trigger. So don't wait until you get triggered and then do it. Just make it a regular part of your practice. You know, 3 times a day, you lie down and go through this process. And then what you're actually teaching yourself to do where there's the trigger, then what you respond with is not panic, but right, here I am, I'm in that tube and I'm very relaxed, my body is relaxed, you know, I'm relaxing my, you know, the old yoga relaxation, you know, I'm relaxing my feet are relaxed. And you just go through the whole thing so that what you're training yourself to do is see being in that machine as a relaxation exercise.
I'll do that. That sounds like a great suggestion.
Good. Let me know, will you?
Well, what happened was a few days ago, the nurse called me and said, you know, the doctor, because I had made a request for what is called an open MRI. I don't know if you know what that is. It's an MRI, but instead of being in the tunnel, it's kind of like being on an X-ray table. In this source of imagery is like 2 feet away from you.
Uh-huh.
And I was approved for that. And then, but the head nurse in the orthopedic department said, you know, the doctor thinks it's a waste of money to do that because he won't get the images, but he's willing to waive the MRI requirement. But what's curious is that morning, I swear, Sherry, swear to Buddha, I had made peace with all the resistance. I said, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it. I don't want to say I want to do it like a man. That sounds a little too willful.
Do it
but
like
I'm going
a
to
Buddha.
Use it as, pardon me?
Do it like a Buddha.
What? I was going to use it as a practice opportunity. I says, okay, this scares the devil out of me, and I'm going to do it anyway because I don't want my life run by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got released from the requirement.
Well, of course, what you can do then is go ahead and do this practice that we're talking about, and then you can request an MRI just to see how you do.
Whoa. Whoa, that's pushing
don't
the envelope.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is pushing the
mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you need an MRI and then the doctor decides not to do it because you really don't want to, that's not the same as it wouldn't be good for you to have the MRI. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, it was more from the doctor's view, as the orthopedic nurse explained, it's more like, how do you say, it's not required, but it's something he likes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he could go have them all done all he wants. Sorry about that. Okay, so just do the imagery and let me know how it goes, okay? If you've had 4 or 5 of these, excuse me, you'll have more of them. So you'll be geared up when the next one is suggested.
I will be ready and primed for the Olympics of meeting.
Of MRIs, that's it.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I'll be a champ. I'm going to use that as my practice opportunity.
There you go. There you go. All right.
This has been so helpful. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Take good care of yourself, huh?
And thank you, Michael. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Good night, Rico.
Basho.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Ellie in San Diego.
Well, hello, Ellie. I think we tried this a while back, and we got cut off, didn't we?
Yes. Yes, we did.
Well, here we are. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm being successful in the, or I'm enjoying the email class, which is a nice shift because I've really struggled with the last couple.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. So that's good. But then I enjoyed the last couple. So there is that. It's kind of like my little joke about the doctor liking the MRIs. You know, it's different process when you're offering something than when you're a participant. So yes.
Yeah,
so I'm glad you're enjoying
it. Thanks. It's been 2 years since I went to the monastery and for the first time. And what I've noticed is that conditioning almost got me to leave practice entirely. It had kind of snuck in there and needled me about a bunch of different things, but mostly about the privileged environment. And so I wanted to explore that with you.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't like it. That would be my guess. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And it's kind of what I was talking about a little the last time when we got cut off, but that, there's a whole lot of stories about it, and I've done a lot of recording and calling in on some of the, like, RLB support calls because it would introduce challenges there. And the biggest thing is conditioning says that the privileged environment keeps me separate and makes it impossible for me to connect with others who are practicing on an individual basis.
Uh-huh. It keeps you from connecting on a personality level.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is true. That's the whole point.
Well,
that's why we do it.
And
so shall I just give you a couple of little things about that?
Please.
So yeah. So here's what human personality interaction looks like. I meet you, I get to know you, we get to know one another until one or the other of us figures out what we don't like about the other one and rejects the other one. Now, if you think that's not true, I want you to think about the number of people that you've met in your life and the number of people you have in your life. So that's egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate / personalities' primary focus in interacting with people is to find out what's wrong with them, find out what's wrong with you, create a situation of judgment and comparison and disliking, envy, jealousy, threat, whatever it is, makes a big case and gets rid of the person. So that whole process is what's actually keeping you from connecting with people and keeping you feeling isolated, which is the whole point of it. Okay? So you're in the privileged environment. Say you're on retreat, and you're on retreat with people for, 4 days, 5 days, a week, whatever it is. And the only thing you know about these people is what goes on with them at the deepest, most intimate level. Okay? You don't know anything about whether they like baseball or watermelon, or whether they grew up here or there, whether they have come from a rich family, a poor family, whether they have a massive education or didn't finish eighth. You don't know squat about them, except you know because you've seen and experienced the sweetness, the innocence, the depth of goodness in them. That's all you know. And as long as you stay in the privileged environment, that's all you'll ever know. And you will love them, and they will love you, and there'll never be anything to come between you.
Except that when I'm not at a retreat, then there's virtual opportunities, but there's not that in person, and there is a difference there when you can meet with people in person.
Oh, sure, but you can meet with people in person, but it's going to be within the privileged environment, right? So if there were somebody who lived down the block from you, who also practices, you could meet together, you could sit together, you could have group, you could do reflective listening, but what you couldn't do if you're a part of the practice is hang out and gossip and let ego tell its stories and go into judgment and criticism and comparison and blah 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 inside the head.
Well, and I'd love to do that, but it's just there's not a way to connect, like. Yeah, so that's where I find it really
I'm
sticky.
I think I'm missing your point, because are there people that you who are near you that you would who do the practice that you would want to just hang out with?
No, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
There's not a way. Like, I live in a pretty big city. And so my guess is there's other people in San Diego, but there's not a way to find them to sit so that I can practice with other people.
To have a sitting group in San Diego?
Yes.
To have other people to sit with in San Diego. Have you ever asked the registration office about this?
I have. They said that I could organize one if I went to a certain number of retreats, but I haven't been able to go to that many yet.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And, okay, yeah, I'm still missing the point of how the privileged environment fits in with this. Because if there were other people there to practice with, it would still be within the privileged environment.
So what conditioning or whatever the voices in my head say is that it's the privileged environment and having to go through, like, not having the ability to connect with people on an individual basis that keeps me from finding people that I can practice with.
In this practice?
Correct.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I really can't follow the logic of that. So, in other words, if you had a list of names of people in your area who also practice, you could call them up and find out if they wanted to sit with you.
Yeah, basically.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so is it that you want to have people to sit with? Are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. There is
you
also
want
a part of wanting a personality connection, but
okay. Well, then
I understand
part
of it.
I thought we were going to get around to that. So, so here's my best encouragement to you. Okay, and this is really good encouragement. That voice in your head, which you can identify as conditioning. Now, the thing that we know from practice is that voice is not on your side, right? That's the voice that tried to get you to quit practicing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's decided that it's the privileged environment that is the difficulty that you are stumbling over, that you want to be able to have personality connections with people that you practice with. Yeah? So if you want to listen to that voice and you want to follow that voice in your life, then certainly you're welcome to do that. I'm going to encourage you to consider that that's not a good direction. Because there are tons of people that you can practice with and have personality connections with. Tons of them. They're all over the place. San Diego is crawling with them. Okay? They don't do this practice. So if you want to do this practice, then you've got to let go of the conversation that says you want a personality connection with people that you practice with, because that's never going to happen in this practice. And the reason it's never going to happen in this practice is because I've been doing this for longer than you've been alive, right? And the thing that I've watched over and over and over again, and you can see it everywhere, is that personalities destroy practice. They get together, conditioning takes over, they start angling for the things that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate wants, and they destroy the practice. And that's not going to happen with this practice.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you want to do any research on it, there's plenty of it. There's plenty. There are endless stories of what happens to spiritual, to religious organizations, to even beyond that, when personalities are allowed to come in and egos are allowed to act out and do what egos do, and it's ugly, and it's just the thing to me. So years ago, I was invited to teach at a very famous, oh, we're past time, I see, so I'll make this quick, at a very famous Zen center. And as we were going in to the place, I was talking with the person who ran it and who invited me there, and she was asking me about something, about the privileged environment and that sort of thing. And she said, well, what about relationships? And I said, what about them? And she said, well, don't you think it's important for people who practice together to be able to have relationships together? And I said, no. And she said, but relationships are real life. And I said, yeah, relationships are real life. And people need a place where they can come and not have to engage in what is called real life. So the world is full of personalities, is full of real life. We've all experienced that. Is there a place that is safe, that is privileged, that is protected, where we don't have to be a personality? We don't have to listen to ego run its games or do its numbers or try to set us up for misery or to do things that we're, or say things that we're going to feel bad about, feel guilty about. Like, we can just focus inward. We can just concentrate on paying attention to the inner workings of the human being who we have the opportunity to save in this lifetime. And I am 1,000% for that.
Thanks, Sherry. I'm
going
to
so
listen
welcome.
To this a few times and maybe go back and read that Musings article about the privileged environment again.
Good. And then we can talk again.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Gusho.
Gusho. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. Wow, that was a fabulous conversation, Sherry. Love that.
Good. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Very helpful.
I'm sorry we went
very
so helpful. Over time, but sometimes it happens, huh?
No problem.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. I'll see you pretty soon, huh?
Yes. I'll see you Thursday.
All right.
And thanks for a great show.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Okay. Good night.